UEG Talks, gastroenterology to go. Welcome to our GI podcast. Listen for fresh insights and perspectives in science, education, and professional development.
Hello, everyone. My name is Agle, and I'm the host of UEG Talks, educational and hopefully fun dive into GI world and beyond. We are very happy to have you with us for another exciting episode. And today is more exciting than ever, as I'm joined by the marvelous spirit of education and UEG, ever cheerful GI experts from London, Charlie Murray, to co-host a special episode of UEG Talks. Welcome, Charlie.
Thank you very much. Ever cheerful, I'll take that. So today we're talking about a very important issue. So we're talking about cultural challenges, hardships that sexual and gender minority groups face, both as patients and professionals, and think about how we can do better. And there's no better man than to talk us through this. And today's guest is Alex Goldowski, who is a gastroenterology attending in Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, an instructor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, a master of the gut-brain axis, whose passion and dedication to improving experience of LGBTQ plus community patients and professionals is indispensable. Welcome, Alex.
Thank you so much, Charlie and Egla. I really, really appreciate it. Excited to be here with you.
Where to?
Yeah, as are we. Very much looking forward to our discussion. So I'm going to kick off, if you don't mind, Alex, and just ask you a sort of straightforward question to get started, but one I think straightforward. So what would you say are the main issues that the SGM community face in the medical context? So by that, I mean both people in the workforce, but also as patients.
Absolutely. I think a really, really important question. I think for me, I'm going to separate the two. When it comes to our patients, we should think about the sexual and gender minority community or LGBTQ community as a minoritized community or a minority community. And as a result, they face a great deal of stigma and discrimination. And as a result of that, do not present to healthcare particularly regularly. They've had negative experiences. They may have had a physician tell them that their, quote, lifestyle is not appropriate. They may have gotten recommendations that they don't agree with. They may have been misgendered. And I think all of the disparities that this community experiences can get boiled down to a lot of this negative interaction with the healthcare world. You know, within gastroenterology, using this minority stress model, we hypothesize that SGM folks are going to be overly represented in conditions such as irritable bowel syndrome, functional dyspepsia. And it's important for us to bring them to care. It's important for us to acknowledge that, you know, they have had experiences that others may not have had, in very negative experiences. And ultimately, we need to do better as a community, both within GI and as a whole, to care for the SGM community. When it comes to the provider side of things, I think that, you know, as an LGBTQ provider myself, you know, I've been lucky that I've worked in environments that have been generally supportive. But we do recognize that physicians and other healthcare providers that are LGBTQ hear disparaging comments quite commonly. In a study from about, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, that number was somewhere around 60 to 70% had heard disparaging comments about the LGBTQ community. So as providers, I think it's important that we, one, educate ourselves about the LGBTQ community so that we can better take care of our patients, but also, you know, educate ourselves about our colleagues and how we can best interact with them and, you know, move this field forward.
These are the main issues that the SGM community face, but what are the wider social consequences and implications of these issues? Where do they lead us?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, the LGBTQ community experiences increased rates of other conditions, things like depression, anxiety, suicidality. And can we tie this directly to GI conditions? Not necessarily, but we can tie it to this discrimination stigma and also this idea of coming out, of being in the closet and having to conceal one's own identity. We also recognize that the LGBTQ community has increased rates of alcohol use disorder, tobacco use disorder. And as a result of that, we hypothesize the other kind of sequelae of that. So might they have higher rates of alcohol-related liver disease? Might they have higher rates of obesity because of the increased prevalence of eating disorders? These are some of the other downstream effects that we see.
I think that's really interesting, Alex, isn't it? You make a point about social issues associated with these problems. And I guess that segues quite perfectly into Alex's question, really, which is that something you have a great deal of experience in, but what are the sort of medical and research implications of this?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, for me in the work that I do, my background is primarily in disorders of gut-brain interaction, the irritable bowel syndromes and functional dyspepsias of the world. You know, I view my role is to both improve the quality of my patients' lives. And for me, you know, 10 to 15% of my entire patient population that I care for is LGBTQ identifying. And, you know, the way that I do that is be as affirming as possible with all of my patients, regardless of their sexual or gender identity, race, socioeconomic status, ethnicity. But in addition to that, for my SGM patients, you know, being able to obtain a sexual history in a both sensitive and affirming way, being able to, you know, explain to my patients that, you know, their experiences are legitimate, and especially their negative experiences they've had in the past, and to primarily just listen to them. And I think that's the most important thing that I have learned throughout my training and in my time as an attending gastroenterologist, is listening can pay dividends so, so much further down the road. And I mean, from the research side of things, since you mentioned it, you know, the LGBTQ community is a grossly understudied community of individuals, particularly within gastroenterology. You know, the group that I am a part of doing research in this area, we're starting to examine the prevalence of disorders of gut-brain interaction using national survey-based data in the United States. We're also looking at how can we best improve education in this area for providers so that they can better take care of the LGBTQ community within gastroenterology. And then, you know, finally, just understanding what our LGBTQ patients with digestive health concerns are going through and what things are going well and what things are not going well, and using that to identify areas for improvement.
We talked about this before in terms of research, Alex, you are an Egler, and you made some fascinating things that I think some of us weren't aware of, which is some of the implications in terms of prevalence or incidence of certain diseases. Is there anything you'd like to share with us in case others were as ignorant as we were?
Absolutely. You know, for us, I'll be as detailed as I can. We have some work that, you know, we're in the publishing process on this. But, you know, things that we recognize are the very significant overlap between anxiety, depression, and gastrointestinal disorders, particularly things like irritable bowel syndrome and abdominal pain syndromes in the LGBTQ community. There's a significant overlap between the two, and as a result of that can compound kind of the symptoms that these patients are experiencing. So we very much recognize that. I think the other big thing in the work that I have been able to do and that I've realized is that, you know, providers are very interested in learning about this information. They just do not feel equipped with the expertise and knowledge in this. They want to take care of our SGM patients in a sensitive and affirming manner. They just don't know. And that's, I think, the first step in what we are doing here is we recognize what we don't know. Okay, let's find the expertise and let's find the experts so we can, you know, teach folks on how to take an appropriate sexual history for a patient with diarrhea or bleeding. The last thing that I will mention here is that, you know, our patients are where we're learning the most from. We're currently doing a qualitative study looking at one-on-one interviews with LGBTQ patients with GI conditions. And we are learning fascinating things, including the relationship that they have with their providers, what providers are, you know, hypothesizing is the link between their conditions and other diseases that they might have, and how that works in both a positive and negative way.
You've mentioned this, that you are investigating the link in between the perception and the disease, but also you've presented some very interesting data, because gut-brain axis, emotional comfort around you seems quite straightforward. But there's also really staggering data about, for instance, colorectal cancer incidence, not even mortality, but incidence.
Absolutely. You know, we recognize that even on a screening level where we're trying to screen for colorectal cancer, you know, the data is very, very mixed and very inconsistent, likely because of how understudied it is. However, we do very much recognize that in one large national study that apart from, you know, controlling for socioeconomic status, controlling for age and all of these other variables, there was a large study done about 10 years ago that showed that in areas where there were higher percentages, sexual and gender minority folks, both those that identify as male and female, that there were higher incidences of colon cancer and, in the case of men, higher mortality rates. And that is independent of all this. So all we are left with is their sexual and gender minority status. Why that is, we don't fully understand that. And we don't exactly know. Is it because they're not presenting for colon cancer screening as regularly? Is it that they're delaying care? It's really hard to say. And it just speaks to the need for further research. You know, in terms of other malignancies, we recognize the link between higher rates of anal squamous cell cancer in men who have sex with men. We also recognize that there are increased rates of head and neck cancer in lesbian and bisexual women. These are things that are very clear disparities that we need to, you know, learn more about and do better for our patients, because many of these malignancies, or at least some of them, particularly anal squamous cell cancer, we have vaccines now that we can give. So it's about how do we reach our community to make sure that they are up to date on their healthcare maintenance.
Thank you, Alex. So could we move from the issues and be the solution? And could you please tell us, what is Rainbows in Gastro? I know you're one of the founding fathers of this society. So what drove you and your colleagues to establish it?
Thank you so much for bringing this up and for allowing me to speak about Rainbows in Gastro. So Rainbows in Gastro is the organization of LGBTQIA plus gastroenterologists, hepatologists, nutrition providers, as well as allies. We're the only organization. We are a nonprofit organization within the gastroenterology world. And our goal is to really bring issues of sexual and gender minority health within gastroenterology to the forefront, both on the patient side as well as on the provider side. So we have our acronym CHARM that kind of outlines our main mission here. So what CHARM stands for is community, healing, advocacy, research, and mentorship. And we have leaders in each of these areas that are looking to really show the gastroenterology world how important this work is. I am the treasurer of the organization. Our organization was founded by two individuals, Nikki Duong, based out of Stanford Medical Center in California, as well as Sonali Paul, based out of University of Chicago Medical Center. And, you know, they saw a need. They saw that there was no organization focused in this area. It started out as just a DDW meetup that was about 15 individuals. We now have an executive board, of which I'm a member of that, and we have somewhere between 90 and 100 members that, you know, call Rainbows in Gastro one of their homes. We're really excited. This is our first full year as a nonprofit organization, and we're looking forward to doing a lot of work to both advance research in this area as well as advocate for our patients, because we do recognize that the world that we currently live in is a very polarized world, a world in which many LGBTQIA plus people feel scared and don't know what the future holds. So we feel that it's our duty to advocate for them and to really, you know, advance this work forward.
Thank you for that, Alex. So I was going to ask a question more about the focuses of Rainbow and Gastro, but I think you've answered many of those. But I guess how I could reframe that is you mentioned living in a polarized world. In the next year or two ahead for your nonprofit and the success of the first year, what will you be your main priorities?
Absolutely. I think that's a great question. I think for our group, the areas that I think we're really trying to focus on are in the, you know, community advocacy and research. And I'll touch on the other areas. You know, when it comes to community, we view ourselves as a open, invisible organization. We have a website, and many of us are online searchable that shows that we are, you know, caring for this community of individuals. I would say, you know, being visible and being, you know, out and being able to show folks that we are a safe place for them to seek their care. So that's, I think, where the community aspect is. Apart from, you know, our events at DDW, where we try to bring our community out to the larger gastroenterology world. When it comes to advocacy, a lot of the advocacy work that we are focused on is related to, you know, unfortunately, what is going on both in the United States and around the world, particularly amongst the transgender community and for our transgender patients and providers. And, you know, the fact that, you know, they may not feel safe going to our conferences or traveling. They may not feel safe going to see a provider about that. So, you know, thinking about how we can better strategize both, you know, petitions and things like that, that we can bring up to leadership within the GI world, but additionally trying to advocate on a larger scale for our patients, things like transgender bathroom bills. And, you know, if you're a transgender patient who has ulcerative colitis, and you have an ileal pouch anal anastomosis, and you need to use the bathroom 6 times a day, you should be able to go to the bathroom of the gender that you identify with without fear that you're going to be forcibly removed or arrested. So it's thinking about things like that. And the research side, really focusing on some of our target areas. So we currently have an inflammatory bowel diseases working group. We have a group of us that are very much interested in studying the disorders of gut-brain interaction. Dr. Paul, based out of Chicago, is hepatologist and is interested in looking at the role of liver disease and how that is related to the SGM community. So those are just some of the kind of highlights of things that we're thinking about, but we have a lot of ideas. We have a lot of really passionate people working with us, and we're very excited to spread our mission to the GI world.
Wonderful. Thank you for that, Alex.
So Alex, you were talking about massive cultural shifts and what needs to be done on a systemic level. But if it's not changing as fast as we would like, what can we do on our own, on a personal level, to address these issues that SGM community faces?
I think, Egla, the question that you ask is truly, I think, what gets at the heart of this is, like, what can we do as individuals, as providers, for both our patients and others? For me, the motto that I have learned through all of this and that I really hold very seriously is to treat others how we want to be treated. Treating our patients like we would want a loved one to be treated. And whenever I'm interacting with a patient, that is what I very much stand by first and foremost. And I would argue that most folks within the world of healthcare, within the world of gastroenterology can agree with that. That at its core, really what I'm telling a lot of people to do who are interested in this is be a nice person, be sensitive, be affirming, treat this person as if they were your parent, your sibling, your friend. And if we start at that level, we're already making a lot of progress. You know, some of the other things that we're focusing on is education. So we have a fairly sizable network of individuals, myself included, who are very comfortable and have given many talks on this area to gastroenterologists, to trainees in training programs, looking at sexual and gender minority digestive health, but also just, you know, LGBTQ health as a whole. And I think having these regular educational opportunities, which I would put this podcast in that group of things here, you know, that's another great opportunity. Because as I said, really one of the main things that providers want is they just want someone with expertise. They want someone that can help them better understand this community. They're interested. We just need to kind of take the next step and say, okay, they're interested. How can we get this information disseminated towards them? Those are two of the main things. And then, you know, the third thing is if you have a question, let's study it. As I said, the LGBTQIA+ community, especially within gastroenterology, very understudied. There's so many questions that we have. And I know that there are other individuals that have those questions too. And the only way that we're going to continue to learn more and continue to better take care of our patients is by engaging in this academic study to, you know, better understand what the needs of the community are and how we can best serve those needs.
Well, thank you, Alex, for such an inspiring conversation. I have to say I could listen to you all evening.
And I really appreciate you all having me on as a guest. It's great to know that folks across the Atlantic are also very interested in this. And, you know, we want to expand Rainbows in Gastro. We want to expand our community of providers and individuals that are interested in studying this and helping us study this and work with our patients. So thank you both for having me on.
No, not at all. And Agla, would you like to say anything just to finish?
I am just smothered with the warmness of Alex's point about being a human among humans, and that we sometimes might forget this, and cultural humility and attention to another person. So thank you both. Thank you, Alex. We'll see each other, I'm sure. Maybe you'll come to UG Week.
I would love to have a conversation with you all in person. I would love to come to UEG, hang out with you all, and to learn more about what you all are doing. That would be fantastic.
Wonderful, Alex.
We'll keep you to the promise then. Thank you, Charlie, for co-hosting today's important episode of UEG Talks. And thank you all for joining. And please visit the website of Rainbows in Gastro. And let's see each other soon. Ciao.
Bye.
Ciao.